So I'd like to speak a few things on first I'd like to read a little bit from an essay or a public speech or something like that that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur spoke about assuming responsibility of being guru. His language is high, but if you listen carefully, you catch the drift of what his message is. We have taken upon ourselves the responsibility of welcoming this grave charge. All the audience have accepted ordinary seats, and I alone have been provided with a lofty seat. All are being told, in effect, do have a look at this big animal from the zoo gardens. What arrogance. So foolish, so wicked. Have you ever seen such a big brute? Garlands of flowers have been put around his neck. What laudations, what bombastic, long-drawn and hyperbolic adjectives. And how complacently, too, he is listening to the praise of his own achievements. How intently. And with his own ears. He also evidently feels delighted in his mind. Is he not acting in plain violation of the teachings of Mahaprabhu? Can such a big brute, so selfish and insolent, ever be reclaimed from brutishness? That's how he starts. I happen to be one of the greatest of fools. No one offers me good advice on account of my arrogance. Inasmuch as nobody condescends to instruct me, I placed my case before Mahaprabhu himself. The thought occurred to me that I would make over the charge of myself to him and see what he would advise me to do. Then Sri Chaitanya Dev said to me, in poetry, whomsoever thou meetest, instruct him regarding Krishna by my command, being guru, save this land. In this thou wilt not be obstructed by the current of the world, thou wilt have my company once again at this place. It's poeticizing instruction from Chaitanya Charitamrita. In these verses, it is to be found the proper explanation of the apparent inconsistency noticed above. By whose only teaching is humility greater than that of a blade of grass, said, Lord Chaitanya said, by my command being guru, save this land. In this instance, Mahaprabhu himself has given the command, his command being, perform the duty of guru, even as I do it myself. Also convey this command to whomsoever you chance to meet. Chaitanya Dev says, tell them these words, namely, by my command being guru, save this land, deliver the people from their foolishness. Now, whosoever happens to hear these words would naturally protest. Palms joined. But I am really a great sinner. How can I be a guru? You're Godhead himself, the teacher of the world. You can be guru, to this Mahaprabhu replies. Again. In this thou wilt not be obstructed by the current of the world, thou wilt have my company once again at this place. Then he quotes, essentially, do not practice the craft of a guru for the purpose of injuring others through malice. Do not adopt the trade of guru in order to get immersed in the sloth of this world. But if you can indeed be my guileless servant, you will be endowed with my power. Then you need not fear. Paragraph. I have no fear. Bhaktisiddhanta has no fear. My Gurudev has heard this from his Gurudev, and it is for this reason that my Gurudev accepted even such a great sinner as myself and has told me, by my command, being Guru, save this land. It is only those who have never heard these words of Gaurasundara who say, how odd to listen to one's own praises. While the Guru is instructing his disciples in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, what a great sin, in their opinion, is he not, what a great sin, in their opinion, is he not perpetrating? So the 11th canto verse we're going to speak later. What is the acharya to do when he has to explain the sloka, acharya mam vajaniyat, which means never disregard the acharya, never entertain the idea that the acharya is your equal in any sense. These are the words of Sri Krishna himself by which the jiva is to be benefited. Is the guru to take himself off, to desert his seat, the seat of the acharya from which these words are to be explained? That office his Gurudev has conferred on him? If he does not act up to its requirements, he is doomed to perdition by reason of his offense against the holy name in the shape of disrespect toward the guru. He has to do it, in spite of the fact that such procedure is apparently open to the charge of egoism. As the saying goes, having started on the dance, it is no use to draw close the veil. You heard that one before? Apparently it's a Bengali saying. Prabhupada would refer to it something like this. A girl is trained from youth in dancing, and then it's time for the performance, the curtain opens and she's shy. She can't dance because there's an audience in front. So, similarly, having started on the dance, it's no use to close the veil. I have to serve God in the straightforward way. The word of God has come down to the Gurudev. I have to obey it in all sincerity. I will not disrespect the Guru at the instance of any foolish or malicious sectarians. Especially Gurudev has directed me, saying, by my command, being Guru, save this land. This command is as my Gurudev has preached. My Gurudev, in his turn, has conveyed the command to me. I will not be guilty of any insincerity in carrying out that command. It's not easy. From the discussion this morning, the effect of the chanting of the holy name becomes made possible, or the fullness of it becomes possible, through meekness and humility, and then taking on a position of responsibility where persons are to honor and respect, it seems to run contrary. Just a little sharing. It was wonderful growing up in Krishna consciousness under the direct guidance of our founder Acharya, because many, many core principles were given to us, later expanded, but at least core principles. And one of those core principles was, in brahmachari life, like lived so many years in the brahmachari ashram, when you see another devotee first thing in the morning, you offer your obeisances. And That's a nice principle to live by. I mean, not just, you know, the mechanics of paying obeisances, but from the heart, offering respect, because here's a spirit soul who, unique amongst all the literally countless numbers of spirit souls, is carrying devotion for Krishna in their heart. So we offer respect to the soul, and the soul's carrying Krishna within their heart. Their devotion for Krishna, we're offering respect to that. And again, for years and years, days and days and months and years. And then something happened. I was told by my GBC, you've been approved by the GBC to take sannyas. I said, oh? Why? What, you know, why take sannyas? Well, it'll increase your preaching. I said, I got more preachings coming out my ears. I don't need something to increase my preaching. And the GBC said, oh, you're attached. I didn't understand till later what he meant. What he meant was, oh, you're thinking that you may want to become a householder, so you don't want to take sannyas. That's, I think, what he meant. He didn't explain it. Okay, no sannyas for you. Okay. And then in the course of a year, others came to know that I'd been asked to take sannyas, and they kept saying, you should take sannyas. Why? It'll increase your preaching. I've got plenty. No, but it's good. You should do it. I just kind of kept listening to it, and I got tired of listening to it, so I said, okay, I'll take sannyas. So the sannyas initiation was performed, and just because I, you know, sat at a fire yajna and now had a danda, and I put on my dhoti in a different way, you know, persons would come and pay obeisances. So I would pay obeisances because that's how I was trained. And they would say, no, you're not supposed to pay obeisances. What are you talking about? We're supposed to pay obeisances. Why are you saying that? No, because you're a sannyasi and we're supposed to pay obeisances to you. I said, I don't care. I'm paying obeisances. Then I got over the shock of, you know, wherever I would go, it was like awful. Then it kind of got me. It wasn't for me. It was the sannyas ashram. And I was supposed to be a representative of the sannyas ashram, and then that's what's good for others to pay obeisances to someone who is properly representing sannyas ashram. So my real assignment was to properly represent sannyas ashram. Then it's, you know, then it's transparent. It's not for me, it's for the sannyas ashram, and I'm the representative of that. That's what they're paying obeisances unto. Took a while to get used to that too. And without elaborating, you know, as Bhaktisiddhanta is stating here, it's not easy to sit here and do this. I'll be honest. You know, if there's false ego involved, it's unbearable. It's painful. But if the activity can be done as a service, it's not unto me, it's unto, as he's indicating in his language here, the order of the spiritual master is being respected. And the spiritual master who has given the order, and ultimately Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who has given the order. Respect goes to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then the person who is representing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has the responsibility of being transparent. It goes to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his order, and properly representing. That's the challenge, or the service assignment. And so when, now going on to what he says in that little talk, Acharya Man Vajaniyan. This is two verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, chapter 1, where Guru Tattva is being just lightly touched on. Guru Krishna Rupa Hana Shastrera Pramane Guru Rupe Krishna Kripa Karina Bhakta Gane. Translation: according to the deliberate opinion of all revealed scriptures, the spiritual master is non-different from Krishna. Lord Krishna, in the form of the spiritual master, delivers his devotee. So it's Krishna who is the deliverer, and he's acting through someone, the instrument of Krishna. The position of Guru is the instrument of Krishna, and because of the instrument of Krishna, non-different from Krishna, but different from Krishna. But non-different from Krishna. But not Krishna. The instrument of Krishna. Then, short purport, just two sentences. The relationship of a disciple with his spiritual master is as good as his relationship with the Supreme Lord. A spiritual master always represents himself as the humblest servitor of the personality of Godhead, but the disciple must look upon him as the manifest representation of Godhead. I'll refer back to this at the end of this discussion this morning. But in another address, apparently an initiation address, Bhaktisiddhanta, maybe it was Vyasa Puja address. In any case, Bhaktisiddhanta was saying, the persons who are assembled here have been offering me very wonderful instructions. I take them as my Prabhu. It's quite the opposite, apparently, the opposite of what we just read, taking the position of service on behalf of Gurudev and Mahaprabhu, and so receiving. I mean, he didn't include all the things that he said, but so seemingly just the opposite. The praises that are coming to the spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta is saying, this is very nice. This is instruction of how I should be. I thank you all, my Prabhus, for giving me nice instruction and how I should be. Now I'll try to live up to those nice instructions that you've given. And it wasn't tongue-in-cheek or cute or something. It was at the same time being very bold and strong, at the same time being very humble and understanding the instruction from Krishna comes in various ways. Others can also be the instrument of Krishna to offer instruction. Not only up here, it can be Krishna can instruct from whoever he wishes. We have to be discriminating what's instruction and what's not instruction, or what's to be done, what's not to be done, and so forth. Then this next text, 46, is this verse that he was referring to, Acharyam Mam Vajaniyan Nava Manyeta Karhachit. Nava Manyeta Karhachit, one should never disrespect at any time. Namarcha Buddhaya Suyeta Sarva Deva Mayo Guru. Translation: one should know the Acharya as myself. This is from Bhagavatam 11:17. This is Krishna speaking to Uddhava. One should know the Acharya as myself and never disrespect him in any way. One should not envy him, thinking him an ordinary man, for he is the representative of all the demigods. And purport from our BBT translation. This is a verse from Bhagavatam 11:17:27. This is Prabhupada's purport. Spoken by Lord Krishna when he was questioned by Uddhava regarding the four social and spiritual orders of society, the Lord was specifically instructing how a brahmachari should behave under the care of a spiritual master, in this case, Guru was indicating his teacher. Teacher was seen as guru. He was. A spiritual master is not an enjoyer of the facilities offered by his disciples. He is like a parent. Without the attentive service of his parents, a child cannot grow to manhood. Similarly, without the care of the spiritual master, one cannot rise to the plane of transcendental service. And say the flip side, it's the duty of the spiritual master to assist the disciple to come to the plane of transcendental service. Paragraph. The spiritual master is also called Acharya, or a transcendental professor of spiritual science. Manusamhita explains the duties of an Acharya, describing that a bona fide spiritual master accepts charge of the disciples, teaches them the Vedic knowledge with all its intricacies, and gives them their second birth, the ceremony performed to initiate a disciple into the study of spiritual science is called upaniti, or the function that brings one nearer to the spiritual master. Upa means near or close. Upaniti. That's, you know, the traditional Brahminical procedure of upanayana, the receiving of Brahma Gayatri Mantra, after preliminary work under the guru to learn so many things, like Nimai Pandit, when he was young, was teaching grammar and so forth. But the byproduct or years of study may bring one to the point of qualification when receiving this upanayana or Gayatri, then one can begin the study of the Vedas. But those are all preliminary things. Purushcharya, it's called, mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I like Prabhupada's language specifically that spiritual master is like a father. And in the time of our founder Acharya, when his physical presence it was a little rough and tumble at times because we were quite rough in the purity, you know, area. We didn't really know lots of things. We were quite uncultured and so forth. At the same time, it was very wonderful and exhilarating because we were in the care of our father, our spiritual father. And the present circumstance is there's the physical absence of our spiritual father, physical absence, but the presence of our spiritual father, Founder Acharya, in the form of abundant teachings that he's provided us. Very, very deliberately, conscientiously, systematically giving us the Bhaktivedanta purports and so many other mediums of associating with him. So, in our present time, we have that Vani association, and then the present generation and subsequent generations must, their qualification is very simple to articulate, and that very simple is be, in Prabhupada's language, strict followers, both by prachar, what you say, and achar, what you do. And then he gave so many other criteria, and, you know, little small things like cooperate together and work under the governing body society in my absence, and, you know, some other simple things like that. So there's a number of, in our modern society, ISKCON society, the multiple guru system is there. And there's multiple fathers. Or, you know, maybe from your perspective, uncles. And the etiquette is that respect should be given to those uncles, and the uncles should be ideal representatives of the father, who they're the sons of. So the teachings are above us all, and then there's our founder Acharya, who's the source of those teachings. Of course, those teachings come from disciplic succession, etc. But that's our life in Krishna consciousness. We want that kind of a harmonious life. So that's, you know, I look at ISKCON, especially this ISKCON 50. It's a nice opportunity to certainly glorify Prabhupada, but specifically ISKCON, because it's wonderful that through different challenges, without listing them, ISKCON is still existing and is strong and expanding and growing. And I could, you know, it's a whole other thing to just... Each year, Bhadri Narayan Swami comes here for our midsummer meeting, and he does, you know, an hour and a half presentation on, you know, what's going on in ISKCON in the world today. And some of you have seen that, maybe elsewhere, because he also does it elsewhere. And there's a lot going on in ISKCON today. All over the world. It's amazing things. Amazing. So, in short, ISKCON is expanding. And as ISKCON expands, the family expands. And as the family expands, there's need for more and more, exactly as Prabhupada did, persons to guide the family members. I like to call that village elders. The global village, and then there's village elders, and those village elders have a nice service to do. I was sharing this with somebody just yesterday. Something that... is Sri Radhika here? She's with her kids. Okay. Something came up the other day when we were at some program, and... Oh, yeah. One of her children started screaming or something. And she was just like, you know, carrying on. She didn't even notice it. And I was like, wow. And she said, oh, this is right in the middle of class. Oh, I'm used to it. Just kind of tuned it out. I said, I guess there's advantages of being a mother and disadvantages of being a sannyasi. But then there's advantages of being a sannyasi and disadvantages of being a mother. So we need to find the right situation for ourselves where we can be strong in Krishna consciousness and from that position serve the society. So one of the advantages of being a sannyasi, I'll share with you, it's... getting a picture of the progress of devotees at intervals of time. Like, you know, visit a place, spend some time, go away and come back and see the devotees in that place and go away and then see them again. So over a period of time, something that I've noticed, this is from the perspective of those sannyas that visits from time to time, as opposed to those of you that live in a community and stay in your community. And that's, you know, you're seeing incremental, whatever it is, and you don't get necessarily the overspans of time, like time-lapse photography, kind of. So, something that I've noticed is that devotees that make rapid progress or swift progress compared to those that don't are those that have a strong connection with somebody who is proximate and guiding them in Krishna consciousness, and those that don't have that, their progress isn't the same. So I'm going from the, you know, the function of guru is, as Bhaktisiddhanta very clearly articulated, part of the spiritual family that the father is overseeing is the village elders that are guiding others, and if you all wish to progress nicely, work closely with somebody that's a qualified devotee in addition to guru. Something that I have a stone in my shoe, it irritates, is when and it irritates presidents probably more than it irritates me, or at least as much as it irritates me, which is when the primary relationship is with guru and the other relationships just kind of disappear. They vanish. Not good. That's not what a family is. Meaning, you know, respect those other relationships. They're very important. It's part of family. The wholesomeness of spiritual family. Besides, it's not intended to make the burden of being a guru lighter. It's just, it does, but it doesn't neutralize the importance or minimize or diminish the importance of spiritual master-disciple relationship. But it's important. And then comes the next topic, which is maturity. So something like a child grows up in the family knowing the parents. If they're siblings, they certainly know their siblings, but, you know, the relationship, the primary relationship is with parents. And I've had this experience like tons of times. Go visit some family or something. It doesn't have to be in their home. It can be wherever. And you say hello to the child. The child, you know, ducks behind mom and dad. Just literally takes their cloth and just goes like that. Shy. Which is fine. You know, being attached to mom and dad is fantastic. But supposing after some period of time, it does happen, when the parents see, let's supposing it's not just, you know, a sannyasi, it's just somebody that visits the home. Another family, mother and father have a friendship with another somebody, adult. And that adult starts to visit or interact with the family regularly, and the child becomes comfortable with that other family because mom and dad are comfortable with that other family or those other people. So the circle expands. And just take that model and keep moving with that model. And that's a spiritual family. And that's my picture of what ISKCON is. We have our founder Acharya. We have some disciples or some of his followers, faithful followers. And some are faithful followers that don't want that service. They just like being whatever they are. You know, that's because he was just here a little while ago, Dravida. What an exemplary personality. And he doesn't have any interest in that kind of guru-disciple relationship, but he has very intimate relationships with many devotees, particularly in San Diego, but different places, because, you know, they look up to him and go, wow, you're awesome. And he's ready to give his time and congenial association. He's lots of fun. And very Krishna conscious. And, you know, gives nice advice. And a big inspiration. So like that. That's our spiritual family is populated with many, many, many. So little message here is that's good. And I'm speaking on this occasion to encourage those relationships for the wholesomeness of the family. And that's part of maturity. As the child grows up, they can accept other relationships without becoming confused about, you know, mom and dad. They have an affinity for mom and dad, and it doesn't disappear when there's other relationships. It's immature when it disappears. Maturity is to be able to accommodate multiple relationships. And it shouldn't be done prematurely. It should be done in a natural way, according to how different persons progress in their Krishna consciousness. We shouldn't be negligent of the local, whatever it is. The respect should go in all directions, is my point. And that's wholesomeness. And it's part of the symptom of maturity. There may very well be principal persons who we feel a special affinity to. That's good. And then there's others that we don't, it's not the same. Like this notion of like-minded devotees. It's natural to want to be with like-minded devotees. Dravida loves slokas. Some people don't like slokas. Dravida loves slokas. And persons that like slokas are going to love being with Dravida because he loves slokas. And some people like deity worship. I haven't seen Dravida ever do deity worship. But some people like deity worship, and so people that like deity worship like being with people that like deity worship. That's natural. Etc. So while that like association with like-minded persons is perfectly natural, wholesomeness and maturity includes respecting persons who have a different like-mindedness, or groups of persons that have a different like-mindedness, and being respectful to the core Krishna consciousness within and the fidelity to the founder Acharya. It's like a bouquet. Prabhupada gives this example specifically in speaking with one Irish professor who is saying, how is Krishna consciousness going to bring a solution to the Catholic and Irish feud that's been going on for so many hundreds of years? And his answer is Krishna consciousness. And then this fellow is saying, how is that possible? He said, by Krishna consciousness. There's differences, but there's this core. Then he points to his society. These boys and girls have come from so many different backgrounds. Think about it. Look around the room. There's lots of people from the Indian background, of course. Come to the ILS, the International Leadership Sangha. It's a mind blower. It's not just the word international. It's living color. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness is truly international. That's what we're part of. And it's wonderful to appreciate how they're doing this in Africa and how they're doing that in China and how they're doing something else in Southeast Asia and on and on and on. A devotee I know from China works for China Eastern Airlines. And part of what they get as a perk or a benefit is wherever the airlines goes in the world, they can have a certain number of free international trips. And so this devotee, and accommodation. So this devotee went to Paris. They don't speak a word of French. They don't speak a word of English. They only speak Chinese. But, she wrote this really happy letter, just like going to, not the Eiffel Tower, but, going to the temple and seeing the deities and the wonderful kirtan, and they don't have that in China. I don't know how she communicated her needs. Prasadam, hand signals, I don't know what she did, but you're so happy. You get the idea. It's truly an international organization, without elaborating on that. So there's differences. And we respect differences. And like attracts like, and there's differences and respect the differences. Particularly, we respect the Krishna consciousness. And then on that basis, we respect the differences. And we try to be kind to those who aren't devotees rather than look down our nose at those that are not devotees and encourage them in whatever way we can encourage them in their practical life and as well in their spiritual life. There's so many ways, unlimited ways, if one has that spirit to bring Krishna and Krishna bhakti into the lives of people that aren't thinking at all Krishna Bhakti. They may even have an aversion to Krishna Bhakti. Just before coming, as an example, just before coming here, I was visiting in the Potomac area, and Thursday night, there was a home program, and somebody who was a yoga teacher, American woman, you know, from the same part of the country that I grew up in upstate New York, she was very surprised. Oh, you know that place? And I was surprised. You know that place? Yeah, I grew up there. So anyway, she's now a yoga teacher somewhere in Baltimore. And I asked her, how'd you become a devotee? And, you know, long story, but she went to a yoga class that was taught by Hari Kirtan Prabhu, Sansa Maharaj's disciple. And in addition to learning yoga from the yoga teacher, Hari Kirtan, she learned how to, you know, she learned about Krishna from Hari Kirtan. And now she's a yoga teacher learning how to incorporate some of, to give, and her commitment is every class, something. Not like indoctrination, but, you know, something that's comfortable for the people that she gives her yoga class to. And she loves it. And she was giving some examples. I think one of her examples was Satya and Jayant. Are they here? Satya? Where is she? Jayant? Huh? She went somewhere. She's out to lunch, huh? Is Jayant here? They're downplaying. Okay. Something like this. If we hear some pitter-patter, it means they're coming upstairs. They heard their names. Something like this. This yoga teacher found out that these two, they also are in the Baltimore area. We've got this invitation to go to some African-American gathering, and, you know, these two kids could sing. She sings and he plays mridanga or something like that. So, you know, that was how it started out. You know, sacred sounds or something like that. And right away, the audience was into kirtan. And not only into kirtan, they were dancing. And they were like, you know, singing and singing and singing and singing and dancing and singing and dancing and singing. They wouldn't stop. And then she did the yoga class. So the next time she came, you know, where's the music? Did you bring the instruments? Hari Kirtan. So again, just another little example. This is from Penn State University, I don't know, 10 years ago. We got this idea to have at the very beginning of the semester. Were you there, Shyamakunda? We had the mantra yoga. Huh? Yeah, after you left. Okay. So, mantra yoga. Retreat. Somehow the university agreed. Big banner right across the arch. All the students go through the arch to go into the campus. Unless they come from some other part of the campus. But, you know, big traffic. Mantra yoga, contact, blah, 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 Gitanagari farm. So people came. Whatever the number was, something like 30. Badahari was there for mantra yoga. So he started doing mantra yoga. Hare Krishna Kirtan. And the students looked really uncomfortable. You could feel it. And one of the devotees was sitting next to one of the other students who was turned over and said, is this about God? I'm getting out of here. Because they came in their, you know, yoga mats and their whatever you wear when you do yoga. So we, you know, could feel the vibration. So we had a little huddle and said, looks like you guys were expecting another kind of yoga, because it wasn't deception, it was mantra yoga. This is mantra yoga. But you want the other yoga? No problem. We'll just completely change the schedule. Starting tomorrow morning at such and such time, it's bring your yoga mats. We're going to do yoga. And we have Hari Kirtan here as the yoga teacher. Krishna saved us. So the whole morning was yoga. But, you know, he does it creatively, and they felt really comfortable. We're in the temple room, by the way. You know, the curtain was closed, aarties, but, you know, we're in the temple room. They could, you know, then you can hear the bell ringing, and, you know, they know it's something, not just a yoga studio. It's about God, but they're not trying to impose God on us. So they were comfortable. And then lunch. And then after lunch, he had them do, I forget what he calls it. It starts with a V. Some way that you do yoga, but you're moving rather than just doing an asana. Vinyasa yoga. So they did that. They liked that. That was new. Then he had them chant Om. They liked that. That was, you know, neutral. Then he had them warmed up. You know, they felt they got what they came for. Their expectation had been met. And the teacher is very, you know, affable and warm and funny and friendly and, you know, lots of good jokes and things like that. So then evening came. So it was Badahari's turn again. And he was really apprehensive. So he didn't chant Hare Krishna. He did Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya or something like that very slowly. And, you know, they got into it and they were, you know, they were doing this with their hands. And then he stopped. So they did what devotees sometimes do at the end of kirtan. More, more, more. So he looked at them, looked at us, and said, okay, we'll go to this Hare Krishna kirtan. We'll do it slowly. So after some time, you know, they got up and started dancing. They've never seen devotees dance, but they got up and started dancing like devotees dance. You know, going in circles and the back and the forth and the whole thing. So he put his hands up like this and got right into it. And they were dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing. Whereas the evening before it was, I'm out of here. So there, as an example, and there's millions of examples of how those that have, they're carrying bhakti can convey the bhakti that they're carrying in a way that even persons that have some aversion can become accepting. It's not always that it happens, but it can happen. And we should be thoughtful of how we present what we present, knowing the audience and so forth. So there's different ways of presenting Krishna consciousness, is the point. And we should respect that there's different ways of presenting Krishna consciousness. The essence is to bring people to Krishna. And the essence of bringing people to Krishna is through the holy name of Krishna. But we want that. And we should respect those differences. We have our liking like this. Or someone may be diverse and have multiple ways. But be respectful of the multiple ways. Well, even we have our particular liking. And those of you that might be able to participate in this international leadership sangha, I invite you, consider. I mean, I don't know if you have to have some credential that I'm in charge of a certain department or something. I think it's just a matter of, you know, willingness to go and participate, to consult with your... They may ask if somebody registers, oh, can you give us some endorsement, character reference from your local temple president, and say, oh yeah, that they would be really good for that devotee to go. But it will broaden your perspective on the international family, the society of Krishna consciousness. And I'm sure there's going to be lots of take-home things that you can take back to the place where you've come from and how you can apply that. It'll be very inspirational. A lot of preparation, maybe 2 years worth of preparation has gone into making this event meaningful for the people that come. Now, one last thing is, goes along with maturity, but something I very much, and harmony, something I very much like that I've heard from Bandaranayan Swami maybe 20 times, so it's going in. He was sitting in front of Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles, Prabhupada speaking on the Vyasasan, and indicating some of the same that I've been saying, but he said it in a unique way, respecting differences. Prabhupada said, one of the signs of intelligence is being able to hold in the mind simultaneously two opposing views. I'll say it again. In fact, I'll read it. A sign of intelligence is the ability to hold opposing points within the mind simultaneously. Now, the mind is binary, like a computer, or like a switch. It's either on or off. It's a one or a zero. The mind is accept and reject. So if you accept this, the indication is you reject that. Or, you know, liberal and conservative, or, you know, in this world there's different points of view on things. And someone holds this point of view. We've all been through this. It's not new. Then you can find justifications and support within teachings that says this point of view is right. And you gather your quotes and you say it's right. And then there's another group that says that's right. And they have their references and their logic and so forth. And then there's dissension. It happens. It happens, right? So maturity, it's not always they're both right, but maturity is a feature of it. It's spiritual intelligence. Because material intelligence can't do this. Intelligence is higher than the mind if it's functioning properly. So the mind is either this or that. So within the mind holding two opposing views, the capacity to do that is intelligence, or it's the symptom or a symptom of intelligence. So may you all become intelligent. And that's possible through Krishna consciousness. And associating with Krishna conscious persons who have spiritual intelligence and can simultaneously within the mind hold two opposing views. Now you may prefer this one, or you may prefer that one. But, you know, respect, there's opposing views and I prefer this one, and these are my reasons why. And one of the helpful things is to be able to articulate the opposing points of view and the reasons why. Now, when we're dealing with non-devotional points of view, we don't embrace them. But speaking, you know, specifically amongst the society of devotees, I'll just read it again. A sign of intelligence is the ability to hold opposing points within the mind. Going back to Bhaktisiddhanta, back full circle around to where we started from, this position of accepting the position of guru on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, people were saying things, I went to Mahaprabhu and here's what he told me on my order. So there's following the order, and then there's a seemingly very different position that says, all these persons who I'm the guru of, they're my instructors. They're instructing me very nicely. Now I know what I should be doing. And it's not that's contradictory, But within the mind, both things can be held. And then, you know, same for all of us, the applications are different given our situations. It's not cosmetic or something that you put on and take off. It's something that has to be, it's the basis for such an ability is Krishna consciousness. Then Krishna gives the intelligence how to do this, how to live in a society where there's all this diversity, and it's going to grow as ISKCON grows and grows, locally and internationally, locally, regionally, nationally, and internationally. So incumbent upon all of those who are parts of ISKCON, that's all of us, yourself and myself included, we have to come to a better standard, improve ourselves individually, within ourselves, not just expect that others have to do. We do ourselves and be examples of this nice example. It's something that will help us stay closely connected with those that have that capacity. They'll help you. Okay, I'm done.